We're going to get started with the present panel, Perils for Democracy. As I said before, many of you have been to many other sessions earlier today. The Day of Action is a forum that's intended for open, respectful dialogue that brings together really wide-ranging perspectives and really tries to get a handle on present-day political, social, and economic issues and understand what we can do in order to act in a way that's consistent with the values that we hold. So I'm really thrilled at this panel today. So this is we have two experts in Perils for Democracy. Daron Acemoglu from the Department of Economics here at MIT and Daniel Ziblatt from government at Harvard. They're both wide-ranging experts in political economy, labor, historical comparative politics, many other areas that I myself don't know that much about. I'm going to be moderating. I'm a cognitive scientist here in the Department of Brain and Cognitive Sciences at MIT. My role will be to eliminate any trace of insider baseball and make the discussion as sort of broad-ranging as possible. I'm especially thrilled to have these two speakers on our panel because not only are they experts in the academic matters at hand, but they are actually also public intellectuals, and they have written books for popular audiences on these incredibly important issues for today. So Daron has written, several years ago, the book Why Nations Fail, Origins of Power, Prosperity, and Poverty. And Daniel has co-authored recently How Democracies Die. And I couldn't think of a more fitting pair of books to set the stage for the kind of discussions that we should be having today. And so I'm going to now turn it over. Daron's going to first speak, and then Daniel, they'll each speak for a few minutes, and then we're going to open it up for general Q&A, and I'll moderate.
All right, wonderful. Thank you. Thanks, Roger. This is great. And thanks, everybody, for being here. I'll come back to this at the end, but the Day of Action is very important because at the end, as I'll talk about it, and I think Daniel will talk about it much more, popular participation is one of the most important weapons that we have against the death of democracy. So what I want to do is just set the scene a little bit and explain why we are in perilous times for democratic regimes. And I think every discussion of this, perhaps rightly, but not sufficiently as I'll try to explain, starts with economic trends. I think economically, we are going through unusual times in that, you know, what makes every regime, but particularly democracies, perform better is the reality and sense of shared gains and shared responsibility. But a lot of the economic changes of the last 3-4 decades have indeed increased productivity and prosperity in many countries, especially in the United States, but not in a shared manner. So if you look at the two engines of economic growth over the last 3.5-4 decades, technological change and automation, both of them have created perhaps even more losers than winners. And I'll just give you a brief sense of what this is about. If you look at the aspect of inequality, we have been going through a period in which the operative word is concentration. There has been an increased concentration of economic power in the hands of a few companies. There has been an increased concentration of wealth and income in the hands of a small number of individuals and families. For example, if you look at the share of the market capitalization of the largest five companies in the United States today, which of course you know which were those companies are: Apple, Facebook, Google, or Alphabet, Microsoft, and Amazon. It is 17% of GDP. In the Gilded Age, when people were up in arms about the power of the robber barons, the same number was 6%. If you look at another metric of economic concentration, the share of the top 1% in national income, that went up from 9% to 22%. So in terms of income, for wealth, this is actually much higher. In terms of income, almost quarter of the income in the United States accrues to the richest 1%. If you look at the richest 0.1%, the same number goes from 2.5 to 11%. Which are just, striking numbers. But even more striking, in my opinion, and actually I think both politically and economically more problematic, is not that, Bill Gates is getting richer relative to the CEO of Target, but it's that the bottom of the distribution is actually not benefiting. So if you look at people, for example, with high school degrees, their real incomes has fallen perhaps as much as one-third since the 1970s. So if you are a high school graduate worker today, and your father was a high school graduate, you're earning about a third less than in real terms that your father was. And at the same time, many of the jobs that people viewed as their sort of the mainstay of the middle class have been disappearing. Estimates suggest that perhaps as many as 3 million jobs may have disappeared because of the increased trade with China. Trade with Mexico may have added more to this, although the estimates are a little bit more uncertain. Just one aspect of new technologies, industrial robots, may have led to about a million jobs disappearing also. If you add other technological trends, you see that a lot of the manufacturing base where the middle class well-paying jobs were have been sort of eroded. And there's nothing wrong with that at some level, which is economic change happens with some people losing their jobs, some people not benefiting as much as others. But the extent of this is somewhat unprecedented, at least in the post-war era, but also the fact that there have been very little action taken to redress this in terms of social welfare programs, social safety net, more redistributive policies. And I think this is only one part of it, and I'll try to explain why it's only one part of it, but it's an important part of it. It is the second aspect that sort of lays the scene is not just economic, but you might want to call it cultural or cognitive, which is that people's frames of reference have been changing also. And this is partly because of, again, globalization, the sense of what it means to belong to a community for some people have been changing. But even more importantly, associated with the globalization technology, but also the increased rise of democracy in the United States, especially with the civil rights movement and other associated changes that have increased the rights of various different minority groups and diverse groups, I think the sense of hierarchies of that many people had in at the back of their minds has sort of been challenged. And I think these challenges are important, and it's important because it is, in my opinion, and we don't have great research to sort of back this up or contradict it, but in my opinion, the interplay of these cultural cognitive challenges together with the economic challenges is particularly important. And I'm going to tie this to what I want to say in a little bit, but as a background, of course, it everybody is aware of this at some level, but perhaps it needs to be said that the ethnic dimension in the United States has always been a sore point of politics. And by this, I mean, of course, race particularly, but race has, black-white has given way to other sort of ethnic or ascriptive characteristic differences. You know, U.S. institutions, of course, as most people recognize, are part of the original sin. A lot of the U.S. Constitution was designed as a way to sort of protect Southern slavery, and discrimination was not sort of an afterthought, but really a very important part of it. And U.S. political system, you know, as late as today, but certainly as late as the 1970s and the 1980s, had very heavy racial elements. But, of course, race is only one aspect of it, and immigration and other people who are viewed as non-natives by some parts of the population coming and moving up the social ladder is an important part.